Welcome to the Diary 101 podcast. I am your host, Aka Kandela Kandepwe, also known as Aka. Again, always going to be my favorite thing I get to do on this podcast, and it's been a year doing it. With that being said, I love today's guests because I love entrepreneurship and I like people that do different things and express themselves differently. And I love diving into other people's work. As an entrepreneur, there's a lot you can learn from others. And I just feel like there's so much I can learn about this person. So when I was doing my research, I kept reading and reading and reading. And I was like, oh my goodness, how do you go from entertainment to flying a plane? Like, am I not doing something right? Is there a skill I need to be learning? So it's so interesting how you can do two different things and be successful at it and start up something that is inspired by you being a pilot. It's everything in between. It's the energy for me. How do you have an energy, a calm persona for a pilot and still run events? Yeah, that's such an interesting thing. With that being said, I'm so excited to have Bobby here, and we're gonna dive into everything he does, and I hope everybody gets inspired. Hi, Bobby.
Hello, how are you, Aka? Nice to be here.
I'm good, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm good too. I'm excited about life and the springtime and this conversation and the Taylor Swift concert you just gave me. I'm in a great mood.
I am a Taylor Swift fan. When I was in America, I couldn't afford to go to a Taylor Swift concert. I feel like that's the first time I said I never want to be that broke. I want to go for that concert at any given point. So yeah, I love it. And you are a mastermind when it comes to music and event. I did not know what to offer you. And I'm so glad you came in 10 minutes before, because you had a whole playlist and it just set the tone. I mean, the Reputation album. I can't wait for the Taylor's version, but
yeah,
it's the album my favorite.
It's funny because I think about concerts a lot since that's a big part of my professional life. But Taylor Swift is on another level with performance. And like you said, her concerts are just an incredible thing. I've never been to one in person, but I have no question that it's amazing and worth it and wonderful. And that's not an easy thing to do these days. And we can get deeper into concert planning and why concerts work and why they don't sometimes and what we do about it and how that fits into the journey.
So if you could attend a concert, which one would it be? If you'd give me the top three concerts you'd love to attend in your lifetime, which ones would you?
So I don't know that I'll love a concert until afterwards. the way that I kind of rate my experience at a concert is I'm an engineer and I need data. Mm-hmm. So as much as we're in an emotional place and I love to be happy and pursue subjective things like that, I need information too to show what's going on. And for a concert, I need a concert that's relevant, authentic, valuable, and emotional. Mm. And those are the best experience. And the same is true for when we're making one. But it's interesting to see in my experiences going to concerts, sometimes it's not what you expect. When electronic dance music was a huge thing in 2015 or so, I remember going to two concerts in 1 week. One was Deadmau5, and I was expecting a lot because I love Deadmau5. Yeah. He's really popular, very talented. And that concert was really good and intricate. There was a lot of effects and moving parts, and it was big and visual and crazy. And I liked that because I'm a tech guy. But what I noticed about it was it felt like it was very rehearsed. I could tell that they had built that concert in a warehouse. They had practiced it 1,000 times. They had perfected the timing, and it was great. And you could see that work had gone into it. But as an attendee, I just felt like I was a passive person watching them do their thing again. And I felt like it would be exactly the same show tomorrow in another city. And that made me feel like I didn't matter as somebody in the audience. And that was a problem for me because it made the show feel inauthentic. If I'm just going to listen to Deadmau5 music, I'd rather do that at home for free. I didn't need to be there for that if there was no personal connection that I was feeling. And then the same week, I went to a different show from a much smaller DJ named Alice in Wonderland. And she doesn't have a big budget. She doesn't have a lot of, crew or equipment. It was pretty basic as far as the setup went. So there was less to see visually, but she was very connected to us. She would come on between tracks and talk to us and say, hey, like, I've never been to Boston before. It means a lot that you're here to support me. Yeah. I'm excited to go on this journey with you. And to me, that was more important than all the crazy lights and lasers that Deadmau5 had. So I needed to see that authenticity. So that was a long answer to your question. The short answer is, no. I don't know who I want to see until I've seen it. But I try to go to as many shows as I can.
I have a list of people I'd love to see.
Yeah? Who are your top ones besides Taylor Swift?
Taylor. Of course. Taylor. It sucks that I've never been to a One Direction concert. I know all their songs. I feel sad that Liam is dead, and I was too young, and I was in Zambia to experience that. So if they ever do a concert, I'm so going.
Yeah.
I'm going. Chris Brown.
Oh, okay. You know,
yes, he was in South Africa in December. I couldn't afford to go, but it was a blast. I know I want to experience a Chris Brown concert because Chris Brown is Chris Brown and he knows how to do it. So I think those are my top three. Love Selena Gomez, but I don't think she's ever going back to being a pop star. So she's out of the list.
She's a TV, famous TV actor now.
Yeah, I'll stick to her old music because I know every lyric and I'm just like, I wish I was in America. I was going to experience all this before everybody grew up.
Yeah, it's true. We do live in a world where we've got great ability to listen to recorded music. And it's interesting to think about that, you know, how, you know, 1,000 years ago, if you wanted to hear music, you just needed to be near someone who could perform it for you. And now look at how much has changed with, I can listen to old One Direction music in my car and it sounds incredible. And that's a cool thing.
I know, right? And they also had amazing concerts. I wish I experienced that. I'm also not a concert person. So when you said that the first of the two concerts you went to, one was too curated, too visual, I can't do that. I can't do noisy places. So for me to go to a concert, I really have to love the artist. So even when we have events in Zambia, I don't go. I had to remove that from my vision board because I was like, I'm never going there. it's peer pressure. But if I ever get a chance to meet Taylor and go to a concert, I am so going because everybody says it's such an amazing experience. And I want to experience it for myself.
Yeah, she has some incredible technology at those shows. It's amazing to watch. Have you watched how you can see the whole show on Netflix from her? Have you at least done that much?
Which one? I did watch the Miss Americana.
Yes. Oh, well, that was the documentary. There was one, I think it was the Eras Tour, and you could just watch the whole concert from the whole thing from your couch. And it was incredible. That's actually what I did for New Year's last year. New Year's 2024, I watched Taylor Swift really loud, and it was like being there. It was amazing.
Wait, what?
Yeah, you should. I think it was on Netflix. Let's see. Taylor Swift.
I'm a follower. I'm a follower.
Eras Tour Netflix. Yeah.
Is it out? Yeah. It's still there?
Relive all of Taylor Swift's eras right here on Netflix. I believe. I believe you can do it.
I will check it out after this conversation. Thank you so much.
Of course.
And I'll give you feedback.
Okay.
So if you'd want me to understand you, how best can you describe yourself?
Ooh, great question. And I know a lot of people answer, like, who are you, with the really answer what you do, as if your job title is the only thing that defines you. And I try not to do that because I'm very proud of my job and the things that I do. But if I had to sum it all up into one description, it's relentless optimist. I always look for ways to stay positive and be curious and creative. I like to ask why. I like to ask how things work and understand things. And then I like to accumulate knowledge and information and then deploy it in a way that makes people happy. So my happy place is right kind of where tech meets art. I want to have an emotional impact using technical things.
Wow. Because I've been trying to understand how Because events are emotional things, right? You might be technical, but you still have to give the audience an emotional feel for them to actually connect and keep coming back or recommend you or talk about you, right?
Absolutely.
There's that aspect. Yeah. And I also realized that being a pilot is a technical thing as well. So why do I feel like I'm a few person? Like, why do I feel like you're in between? How did you find yourself tapping into the feel world where you consider feelings and how to connect to people while you're good at just being very technical?
Well, thank you. And I think a lot of it was paying attention to what makes me feel like I'm doing what I was born to do. And even though airplanes and concerts seem like totally disconnected things, I think there's some common ground there. And that's where I was able to identify that intersection of buttons and tech with something magical. Because when I'm flying an airplane, I'm understanding how to do it. I did a lot of training and studying, and there's physics involved. But the result is I'm able to create what I see as magic. To be able to fly by myself above the clouds is just the coolest thing in the world. So I'm so happy to have achieved a level of expertise where I'm able to not only understand it, but use it, but create something positive that puts me in that zone. And interestingly, the way I got into events in the first place was DJing. I was DJing shows. First they were small, and then they got much, much bigger. And what really put my company on the map was DJing huge concerts for colleges. And if you think about the life of a DJ, it's pushing buttons, right? To understand how to use the music and the tools in order to create something magical for the people around you. And it's the exact same thing as flying. So even though they sound different, it really puts me in the same headspace. And that's interesting to kind of analyze. If you think about what that feeling really is, experts call it flow state. And flow state is when you just feel like you're doing what you were born to do. You're getting this sense of ecstasy. You could do it for hours and hours without needing a break or to eat or sleep. You're just hyper-focused in that place. And it feels like you're where you belong. And that's something that I think everyone's experienced here and there. And it's worth understanding what puts you in that place and pursuing that and including that in your life as much as you can. And flow state is actually defined as doing something that you're highly skilled at and being very challenged in it. So if you feel like you're challenged and you're good at it, you rise to the challenge and enter this magical space. And that's where I'm at with both airplanes and DJing and building concerts and everything else that I love.
Flow state. I am looking back when it comes to myself and I'm like, am I in my flow state yet? And do I think I'm good? I'm an expert at what I do. And am I challenged? I know I'm challenged. It's very challenging what I'm doing. An expert yet? I don't know. And I'm also very in between. Do I need to get more expertise? Or do I need to build something that just hires experts? Because I'm a person that doesn't, I really don't want to be the smartest person in the room. That sounds like a lot of hard work.
Yeah, no, if you are, you're in the wrong room.
Facts. If I'm the smartest person at my company, then there's something wrong. So you've left me with a question I need to answer is, am I at my flow state yet? I know I am growing, and I do think this year I'm gonna grow faster, because last year was more of just the foundation. I think it's now solid for me to just kind of now keep growing. So I'll keep that in mind.
I think it's important. And another interesting way to look at it is, a lot of us, I think a lot of people in general, instead of feeling like they're always in that magical flow state, it would be great if we did, but realistically, people tend to be stressed, right? If you ask most people how they're doing, they say, really busy, I've got my hands full, sorry I didn't get back to you, I'm overwhelmed. Yeah. So the feeling that most people experience regularly is this sense of being overwhelmed. We've always got 100 emails in our inbox. We've got notifications popping up nonstop on our phone. And it can be hard to get above that and feel like we're focused on what we need to be doing and we're not being distracted. And that's important because when you're overwhelmed, what's really happening in the perspective of flow state, you're being too challenged. And unfortunately, it's too much for the skill you have to get ahead of it. Yeah. And that's a relatable feeling. And that feels like stress and anxiety. And those are real things. But what you need to do is be proactive. Instead of just saying, I feel bad, I want to feel better. That's true. But as the engineer that needs the data, now I know, okay, I need to prioritize, get ahead of these distractions. And by getting skilled at what I need to do to figure out how to get ahead of that stuff, that's building the skill I need to shift from anxiety into flow. And that's a more actionable shift to me than I'm overwhelmed and I don't know what to do about it.
That makes a lot of sense. And it takes me back to us, I think, a week ago when we had to reschedule because I didn't add you to my system. It's hard to have a podcast. It's hard for me to remember that I have a recording with you because you're not on my calendar. They set us up, right? And I was so sad that I missed you. I reached out to you on LinkedIn and I'm like, I'm so sorry. And you and Amber said something that I needed to hear. It's okay, life happens. Amber said the same thing. It's okay, life happens. We can reschedule, not for this week, but next week. And she gave me the dates. Because I would beat up myself for that. And you guys gave me grace. You just don't understand how much I needed somebody to just say, it's okay, life happened, and we can do this again. It's not the end of the world. Yeah. I was just like, oh my goodness, thank you.
Of course, you're welcome. And I'm sorry you were sad, and I'm glad we were able to reschedule. And I think it's important for us to acknowledge that this isn't the end of the world, because sometimes there's too many things telling us that we should be miserable or sad or stressed, and to be able to rise above that and just decide that's not how we're going to let things affect us is a choice, and it's an important one. So the more everyone can make that kind of decision, the world will be a better place, right?
Yeah, and I also think that the fact that we're curated and we're on social media most of the time, we talk about, if you lose this opportunity, it's gone, right? And right now, we're only the two of us at Transfer Management. So it means there's a lot of piling work that needs to be reviewed and done. So you get to think, oh my goodness, if I lose an opportunity to talk to this specific person for the podcast, it's a lost opportunity and maybe things will go this way and that way. That's a narrative we also get on the internet to just say, it's a lost opportunity. You do not know where it's going to take you. And it's like, maybe, maybe not. So I think in that moment, I was more on, oh my goodness, what if that was my biggest break? And I lost it.
Absolutely. And people definitely feel that way. But I think something that comes with, experience and momentum and just time, I'm able to look back at my journey and say, you know what? Yeah, there were things that I was worried about, missed opportunities, but it all worked out. The universe seems to keep me on the right path and course correct when it needs to. And so that helps me take a deep breath and have trust that the universe will bring me to the right places at the right times. There's a great quote from a philosopher, Seneca, and he says, we suffer more in imagination than in reality. And that's really interesting because we do punish ourselves for hypothetical what ifs when really we should just be focused on being proactive and adjusting and rescheduling and moving forward.
I agree. I just think if anyone would take away anything from that experience or the three of us, is give other people more grace and hope you receive a little bit of grace as well in anything you do. I think we all just need that. We just need a little bit of grace and kindness to take us a long way.
I agree.
What inspired you to start Think Like a Pilot?
So I've been running the events company for over 20 years now, and it's been very fun and challenging and rewarding and, you know, a roller coaster. Like anyone who's ever tried to be their own boss knows that sometimes it's amazing and sometimes it's stressful and difficult. But after 20 years, it's become pretty stable. It's really starting to work. It feels like less of an experiment and more of, you know, a real company. And I've got an amazing team underneath me that's really grown a lot in the last few years. And that put me in an interesting position because the first time I did these events 20 years ago, I was the sales guy. I was going to the meetings. I was doing the designs. I was performing on the stage. I was building the stage. I was taking the stage down. I was having a meeting a few weeks later to see how it went. I was very hands-on with every piece of the operation in the company. And as I've got more people working with me, they're taking on a lot of that and they're doing it better than I ever did. And so over a few years ago, I realized that this is great, but I'm kind of just supporting my own team and I'm glad to be there for them and I want to be involved, but I also don't want to get in their way. Because one of the hardest lessons I learned as a leader, as a manager, is sometimes what you need to do is empower people and then get out of the way. Make sure they know you're there to support them if they need you, but otherwise don't step on their toes, don't slow them down. And so that was a tricky thing for me to face. And what I didn't want was to let them run all the shows and sit around at home. You know, I don't want to watch Netflix all day, every day, forever. That's not what I want for success. But I also didn't want to get in their way. So I needed something else to take on as a new challenge, as a new venture. And that's where Think Like a Pilot came from. Because in these moments of reflection, I was noticing that the way I had learned to build this company and the way I had learned to manage people and the way I had learned to communicate and manage information and think came from my hobby, which was flying airplanes. I've always been a pilot, or for the last 20 years, for fun. And over the pandemic, I used that time to level up and I got my commercial pilot license, my flight instructor rating, and I'm now licensed and qualified to teach people to fly, which is great because I love it. But what I thought was particularly compelling about this was articulating why pilot thinking made me a good entrepreneur, a good project manager, a good leader. And mm-hmm. I really worked on developing some presentations and some sessions as a way to teach that pilot thinking as a way for people to overcome their stress and their challenges just as people and as leaders. And it has started to turn into a real thing. People responded really well to it. I'm doing some really cool keynote sessions and presentations, and it's such an interesting perspective. Even if you've never thought about being a pilot, you've probably noticed that pilots do seem really organized and really able to deal with scary information when the stakes are high. And there's something to learn from that. And so I've made that my main focus now to understand what that thinking is, how it works, and how to teach people how it can benefit them.
I like that. I want to do something fun.
Yeah. Okay.
If you could take 10 minutes to walk me through a session to teach me a skill from Think Like a Pilot, could you do it right now?
I can do part of it in 10 minutes.
Yeah, we could do part of it. We don't have to do anything big, but I want to do something practical. And I want you to use me as your audience and ask me questions and we can have this interactive session.
Sure. Okay, sounds good. So we'll start with the pilot perspective and I'll tell you how pilots react in a scary situation. And then you'll ask some questions if you have any. And then we'll talk about how that model should be used for people on the ground. Okay. So let's start with, you're flying an airplane, right? You are zooming along in a single engine airplane with your friend in the other seat. You're 10,000 feet off the ground and all of a sudden your engine stops working, right? So now you have no power. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with this situation? Do you have any guesses on what you might do first in that scenario? what do you think you would actually do if you found yourself in an airplane with no power? You'd be terrified, right?
Yeah, I would be terrified, but I'll
Yeah.
actually talk to Control. Is that Control, the Control Tower
At
or
one
something?
point, yes, you would do
Yeah.
that. That's a
Yeah.
good one. You
Yeah, I
also
think
have
I'll
a
be terrified. Yeah.
okay,
And
so you're jumping on the your headset and you're saying, "Mayday, mayday, mayday, my engine failed. Help. What can somebody do for me," right?
Yeah, not
Okay.
really. When you say it like that, it sounds like I'm really panicking, which
Okay.
means the person next to me is panicking.
Ooh, yeah.
So I think I'll start with my friend and say, what would you do
Okay.
if you discovered that the engine is failing?
Ask if your friend could solve this. Okay.
No, I just want to gauge the reaction.
Sure. Okay.
Because
Interesting.
if I tell the control tower first and I haven't looped them in, they'll be screaming by the time I'm done. So I need to calmly inform them, I guess, then tell the
Okay.
control tower, because I can't, a panicked person can't do anything for me. So I need
Okay.
to control my environment for me
Yeah,
to
that's.
actually hear what the control tower tell me.
Yeah, you control. You want to control your environment. That's an interesting thought, and that's important. And those are all decent things and things we do have to do at some point in this scenario. But there's a lot of things we have to do first. So, pilot thinking really boils down to three major phases. And we call it aviate, navigate, communicate. Everything that you talked about was communicate, which is step three. So yes, you do need to tell, a lot of people need information, right? You want to tell the people if the controller can give you a location to safely do an emergency landing. You want that information, keeping your passengers calm. That's valid. That's something you definitely need to think about. But first, you need to aviate. That just means right now, I just need to fly the airplane. What decisions can I make in this moment that give me the best chance of the result that I actually want? And so, if I forget to do that first and start talking to people, my situation can get a lot worse really fast. And so, first thing is put all that on hold, prioritize, and step one, fly the airplane. And this is important, and we're going to get into the real kind of aerodynamics here for a moment. But when you're flying along in a straight line and now you have no power, your instinct, as far as flying the airplane goes, would be to pull up. In your mind, you say, okay, well, I don't want to go into the ground. The ground's down, so I'm going to go up instead, because instinctively that seems like a good idea. I want to go away from the ground. I want to point my nose away from the ground, pitch up. That makes it worse. That would make you slow down fast. And then once you're going really, really slow, you're not flying anymore. Then you stall. And then instead of gliding, you're just falling. And that's an uncontrolled situation. And that's worse. You can manage your airspeed, but you have to be intentional about it. So because I'm thinking about flying rather than communicating, I'm going to make the choice to block that instinct to pull up because I know that's not right. And I'm actually going to put the nose down, because I'm going to use gravity to control my speed. So I'm going to keep going at a fast enough speed that the wings are working and I'm actually controlling the way I'm gliding. And then I'm going to decide, okay, now I'm in control. I know what direction I'm going. And even though I don't have power, I have a choice. Where should I land? Can I land on that field over there? Is there any other good spots to land? So let me ask you this. If you were in this situation and now you're gliding and you're still in control, and you know you don't need to communicate yet, where do you think you should aim that airplane?
Anyway, I can see land.
Yeah. And a lot of people will say maybe a field. And if you get a long enough field, that can be a safe spot. Because at this point, you just want to make sure you can land in a way that everybody can survive, right? That's the goal. One good guess is an airport. Depending on how high you are, you might have three airports really close to you that you could glide to with no power. And those are the best places to land, because you could talk to the tower there, say, "Hey, surprise, I have got an emergency. I'm coming down from above. Could you hold everybody else and let me try to get this airplane down safely?" And then send me a fire truck, send me an ambulance, give me some help, help me tow this airplane or whatever. So safe gliding to an airport is a really great option. And you may only be able to get to that airport if you start making these decisions right away. So aviate first. That's fly the airplane. Second one was navigate. So again, we're not quite communicating yet. That comes next. But now that I'm in control of the situation as best I can, now I need to ask the question, where am I going? What's the next destination? Is it an airport? Is it a field? Do I have no other options? I need to be intentional about not only the fact that I'm flying and controlling this flight, but where am I going? Okay, so then I'm going to commit to that place. And once I commit to the best option, that's the plan. I'm not questioning that anymore. That I'm checking that off the list. Now I'm gliding in a controlled way to the place I want to get to. That happens in the first second. Now I can start passing information around. You mentioned you wanted to talk to your passenger first. I can understand why that would be a polite thing to do, because this poor passenger is probably really scared. Unfortunately, I would rather make sure that my passenger is alive than comfortable. So I'm going to say, you're going to be scared for another few seconds, because I'm going to start talking to the people that can help us. So now I'm going to call on the radio. There's a frequency for emergencies, regardless of where you are. And I'm going to say that, mayday, mayday, mayday. I'm going to try not to panic, because you mentioned panicking might not help. But I'm going to tell them this is an urgent situation. This is who I am. I'm experiencing an emergency. I have no engine. I'm attempting to emergency land at this place. I've got two people on board, and my airplane is blue. And the reason I'm giving that information is now people on the ground can start reacting. So there might be help at the place we're going to land. And if it's a scary crash landing, they might already have two ambulances there, because I told them there's two of us that might need some help. Hopefully we don't, but I'd rather get that planning going sooner than later. I'm even telling them the color of the airplane so that they know what they're looking for if we're not sitting cleanly on a runway, if they're looking for us in the woods, and that's scary. But I want to, even though it's scary, I want to be really intentional about the information that I give to the right places so that we're going to make the best possible chances of having a survivable landing. So it's scary, but I want to do it in that order. So aviate first, navigate second, communicate third. And that's one of the biggest takeaways that I try to illustrate for folks in this talk. And I think it definitely makes a difference with, even if you're not in an airplane with no power, you're able to react in a very prioritized, focused way, because I'm not overwhelmed by the steps that come later. I'm focused on the step I'm doing right now. And so in an airplane, it's A, B, C, D, E. First, airspeed, manage my airspeed. B, best place to land, where am I going? C, look around the cockpit. Can I restart the engine? Can I fix it? Yeah. That would be nice. Let's try that at the right time. D is declare an emergency. That's what we talked about. And then E, execute the best landing I can under the circumstances. And the key thing here is we're not feeling buried in high pressure tasks all at once. I'm doing one thing at a time. And even if that one thing is scary and difficult and important, by only having one thing instead of 50, I'm able to say, okay, this is terrifying, but I need to point my nose towards this field. And that's all I'm going to do right now. And then later I'm going to talk to somebody. Then when it's time, okay, I'm going to update my passenger, because that is important too. But if I get buried in all of this all at once, I'm not going to make a good landing. And that's going to really cause problems for people. So pilots need to stay calm and prioritize. And I think that's the biggest thing we can learn from pilots is how do we get ahead of things so we know which thing to think about in what order. Does that make sense?
Yes. I have follow-up questions.
Sure. Let's do it.
I am done with the laughter, because when you were like, tell your passenger, I was like, I want to be a passenger. I can't be a pilot. I don't think that's for me. So you said aviate, navigate, and communicate, then A, B, C, D, right?
Well, the A, B, C, D is how we organize our priorities in an engine failure, but aviate, navigate, communicate, that's the good stuff to remember.
Yes, I remember those three because now I'm taking it back to business, right? So you have to aviate, meaning you have to prioritize anything. So I also think it means you have to to see what you can control. You have to check yourself first, is how I'd put it. The aviate one is before you go outside and look for something, check if everything is in order. Do you need to restart something? What can you do at this moment? Like you said, if you point the, how do you, what did you say? Like if you point the plane up, it might go down faster, or you, I don't know what you said. But for me, I'm thinking that means I have to control myself first and check myself. I'll use the word check myself first. Check if there's anything else I can do before I can now start looking at different options. Navigating for me would be trying to see what my options are while I'm still up there. Can I see anywhere I can land? Is there another way I can do something, right? What's my other option? What's the best case scenario? What's the worst case scenario? What's the middle ground? And communicate how best, as much as I want to be effective and be polite and nice in communication, just being direct would probably save my life, right? So it would cut down on time. I like this.
And I think to get even more specific to how people can use this in regular life, even if there's not a crisis, let's think about it that way. So aviate, just focus on one thing at a time and know which one you're going to focus on first. And I think a lot of people, we get constantly sidetracked by notifications on our phone. Another email just came in. Should I read that? Should I answer that right now? We're not in control. We're not flying the airplane if we're letting each of these things grab our attention. So instead of being scattered, be intentional, be linear, and know that you're only going to do one thing at a time well.
Yeah.
So that's the aviate. And just like you said, it's focus on you, be in control. Navigate, I would say the simplest example of how to navigate is calendaring, right?
Yeah.
So have a really organized calendar that really reflects how your time needs to go, not just the important meetings, but also when do you need time to eat lunch? When do you need time to drive? When do you need time to get ready for a meeting that's happening later? The more accurate you can make your calendar, the more clear you'll be on how you navigate through each of these tasks over the course of a day or a week. And that makes it really easy to take out all the overwhelm because you know exactly what one thing you're focusing on at a time. And then communicating, yes, we need to react to things and respond. And the example you gave earlier when we had to reschedule this recording, you reached out to me and Amber and you said, I'm so sorry, can we reschedule? And you liked our response because it was quick, it was positive, but there's one other piece there. We said, here are the exact chunks of time we could do this next week. And that let you say, great, I picked this one and it's done. Now we know exactly what our plan is again. And part of that was me talking to Amber and saying, okay, I do want to do this podcast. Here's what my calendar looks like next week. I know exactly which things are happening on which days. I know which ones can move and which ones can't. And I know there's some really specific times that would work really well for this. And rather than just saying, I'm sorry we missed this, let's reschedule sometime. Sure, sounds good. Okay, what works for you? Let me see. I could do this maybe, or I could move this.
Yeah.
You see how we just got to the action? We said, I forgive you. No problem. How about this, this, or this? It got us to the destination quicker. So there's efficiency there because it was a very targeted conversation with the goal of getting something on the calendar soon that worked for everybody. And that was a great example of aviate, navigate, communicate.
I love this. Honestly, you see why I wanted to do this? It gave me more clarity. And I want to attend one of your sessions. I
hope
you
do
have online ones. I want to come and listen in and just learn something because it honestly, it's given me so much clarity on.
Oh, good.
I'm writing that down somewhere and good. I'm quoting you. Person. I am quoting you.
Perfect.
So it's
Thank
aviate,
you.
Navigate, and communicate.
Yes. And let's see if some of your listeners can hire me to come do a great keynote and make sure you get to come too.
Yes, I hope they can. Please hire him. Please
do.
I want to be there. And if you don't do it, Stumo, I'll be there, Bobby.
Perfect.
Just putting it out there.
Okay.
So when you look back, what inspired you to be an entrepreneur?
That's a great question. And the thing that I notice in myself is that I never had the goal of being an entrepreneur. And to be totally honest, when I had this idea for this DJ company that did concerts in a really different way, if I had found a company that already existed that did that, I would have been very happy to work for somebody else and not be the one taking all the risk. And I think that's important because I've heard of a lot of people that they know they want to be an entrepreneur, they major in entrepreneurship in university, and they study classes that teaches them how to be an entrepreneur. And that's amazing, and I probably could have benefited a lot from some of that training because I never got it. But the thing that made it work for me was the fact that I was so focused and passionate on this product, this company I wanted to develop. And I feel like if my focus had been on entrepreneurship in itself, I would have been missing this huge layer of the thing I'm actually working on. Because for the first 5 years of this journey, I didn't get paid. I had to work a different job, writing code in a cubicle 10 hours a day so that I could pay rent. And that was fine. You know, it wasn't my dream job, but it was necessary. It was part of the journey. But I was doing events and DJing and learning and experimenting on the side for free because I loved it, because I believed it could go somewhere, because I felt really strongly about wanting to be an expert at this. And that was by far the most important step in this whole thing. And so now when I meet someone and they say, I want to be my own boss, any advice? And I'm like, yeah, like, what are you going to do? Like, just because you're passionate about entrepreneurship, I'm not seeing any passion focused on a thing that might be viable in order to create this new company that they could then, develop. So entrepreneurship, at least for me, was not the goal. It was an incidental side product, just because there was nobody out there doing it the way we wanted to. And that meant we had to start it up ourselves. And so I learned a lot about being a company and how to register as an LLC and how to pay tax and run payroll and what do I need for insurance and what offices do I need? And all of that stuff I don't love, and I learned because we had to. And after developing a little bit more, I'm able to hire people that are good at these things and like these things, because ideally everybody is doing stuff they're born to do. If you can have everybody on your team in their flow state and empowered to do great work, that's when great stuff happens. But focusing on entrepreneurship as its own task and focus and goal, to me, is problematic, because that doesn't answer the question of what you're going to pour yourself into to make it work.
That's so true. And I have to agree, because entrepreneurship sounds like a fancy word.
Yes.
It's such a fancy word. And we all want to be entrepreneurs. I always say this to my university. I chose my course because it sounded fancy. Not that I liked it that much. But yeah, it's such a fancy word that when a lot of people think about it, they never think about the cost it comes with. It comes with a lot of costs. It comes with it will shape you differently. Some of the things you will go through, people won't understand and would just say, why don't you just get a decent job that pays you enough to have all these problems figured out? So like you mentioned, you really have to point to something you're really passionate about, and you can see you could do something different in that specific industry, and you think the world needs it, so you create it. And the world might not accept it at that particular time, but with consistency, it will eventually. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I like how you've defined that. Next, I think I'll change my question next time.
Okay. I think one other thing worth mentioning is if your goal as an entrepreneur is to get rich, it's not going to work, because it takes way too long getting poor for a really long time before any real money starts to happen at all. And you have to be ready to do it for free for years. And that's going to be a barrier that most people can't overcome. And similarly, I think a lot of people think of this hustle mentality as something that sounds cool, right? Just like the word entrepreneur sounds cool. Yeah, hustle. I'm going to go do that grind and stay up work until midnight to meet my dreams. And like, yeah, like if you have stuff to do and it's 11 p.m., you might still have to do the work. That's true. But that's not the goal. And I think people misunderstand that. They say, I'm going to be an entrepreneur because I want to hustle and I want that to be my lifestyle and I want to get tons of money. And to me, that's unrealistic and short-sighted, because for me, I wanted to get to a point, and it took 20 years, where now I can take a day off if I want to. You know, I don't want to hustle. I'm willing to hustle. I've certainly hustled to get us this far, and I will again. I'll have to work at midnight sometime, and that's fine. I accept that. But that's not the point. That's the passion. Yeah. And the same is true for the money. If the goal had been to make money, we never would have got this far. But interestingly, because we focused on doing it right the way we wanted to, the money started to come later as a result of not focusing on the money as the point.
That makes a lot of sense. I am pretty young and I'm just really starting out as a business person and starting up this business. And actually, recently, I'm starting to see the cost of not having a full-time job and just doing freelance work, because mm-hmm. then it means I do not have a steady cash flow. I do plan, right? But I do not mm-hmm. have a steady cash flow, and that will give you anxiety when you have bills to pay.
Definitely. And that is the role of money for an entrepreneur, is being a millionaire might not be a realistic short-term goal. Yeah. If you have $0 and the rent is due, that's going to stress you out, and that's going to get in the way of your success too. So that's fair.
Yeah. So listening to you talk and saying it's okay for you to make decisions in the short term that help you sustain your life, and you mm-hmm. still work extra hours because you have to, not because you want to. You work extra hours to still get that job done. Is something necessary?
Definitely. So for the first 5 years after incorporating my first business, I continued to work for a big company for 30 hours a week so that I could pay my bills. And then when the company started to generate enough revenue to be viable, the first person I hired wasn't me. It was somebody else. I knew that I would do it for free because I believed in it and I would benefit later. And so I hired a general manager to be the first full-time employee of my own company, even when I still had to continue working somewhere else to pay my own bills.
I needed to hear that.
Yeah. And listen, like, I think it's definitely a unrealistic myth that people have an idea, be their own boss, make millions right away, and have a purpose-driven life and sustainable cash flow within a couple years. I don't think that's how it works. I can't imagine a version of my story where that would have been the case. And to me, like, it's less about, you know, I would never put entrepreneur as like my main title, because I'd rather be known as someone who built a cool company because of what the company's doing and the impact it's having on people. I just had an interesting conversation with someone about how entrepreneurs like to call themselves CEOs, because mm-hmm. there's a certain pride in, I'm my own boss, I'm the chief executive officer. I've never done that. I've always, that gives me a weird taste in my mouth. And I think the reason is, in my day job, when I was still working in the Cube, I was in a huge corporation that had a executive board and old white men in suits and conference rooms and shareholder meetings and stock prices. And I didn't like any of that. Like, yeah, they were making millions of dollars and that's good, I guess. But yeah. I didn't, when I had the power to create my own title, the last thing I wanted to call myself was CEO, because I don't admire the passion and the work that those guys are doing necessarily, unless I hear about the work and that impresses me. And so when people create their own company and instantly put CEO on their business card and their email signature, to me, that's you're creating a lie. You know, unless there's a board of which you're the chief, don't call yourself that. Call yourself what you do or what you want. So I like founder. I like owner. From a functional title, I like director, because that's how what I do in the team. But to me, that creates some humility and some honesty to build a foundation of, okay, like, what are we actually trying to do here? Because if you only learn one thing about me, it shouldn't be that my dream's to be a chief executive officer and that's my fantasy title. That doesn't serve any purpose to me. And I hope you don't, do you call yourself CEO? I hope not.
No,
did I just insult you?
No, you didn't. No, okay, I'm actually thinking about some of the life choices I've made in the last few days. I don't call myself a CEO. I'm the only person that works at my company. No, or two people. One is the person, the podcast manager that I pay. So life choices that I made recently was to, my LinkedIn bio had entrepreneur. But I felt disconnected to it. Recently I have been going back and forth my LinkedIn bio, and I just put founder of Tensor Management and the Diary 101 podcast. And I thought, that really does describe me.
I love it. I think that's great. I think that's much better than entrepreneur, and certainly much better than CEO.
Entrepreneur is like, it's such a heavy title. I don't think I'm ready to.
And listen, all of this is, you know, up to everyone's opinion on what feels right. But ideally, you know, an important question that everyone should be asking more is why. So if I'm looking through people on LinkedIn or somebody invited me to connect and I'm not sure who they are, the first thing I look at, of course, is what's their little title description, right? Because that's the only thing I see besides their name. And if I don't know their name, that's important. So I'd rather see something about why they do what they do or what they're passionate about or something that relates to their flow state. Because just them telling me a descriptive title of a company I'm not familiar with might be a missed opportunity to create a more powerful impression. And that's why I do Relentless Optimist, because it makes people say, huh, that's interesting. I've never heard that before. And I kind of like it. I get value out of that instantly. And I'd like to know more about this guy. What is this person doing that's so optimistic and so relentless? Now I'm curious. And then we can, of course, dive into airplane stuff and keynote speeches and event design and DJ performances. But all that is the what, whereas the why is because I'm relentless about being positive and trying to make people happy.
When you said relentless optimist, you reminded me of Samuel Sinek, because he's always been an optimist. So
that
when
is
you
very,
said
very
that,
much the which, why.
Yes. So when you introduced yourself, back of my head, I was like, I'm going to have a good conversation with Bobby, because I feel like him and I love Simon Sinek, and we've just not said it yet.
Yes, absolutely.
One of the reasons why I said founder is I realize I like building stuff.
Yeah.
And I have the building spirit, right? I might build this organization and it reach its peak, and I might go to and do something else. Like you said, hire people that have the capacity, understand the why, leave it and start something else. And I feel like writing founder describes me as who I am and reminds me that the reason why you're doing it is because you like starting up stuff and you like building stuff. And that's
you're a creator. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I did this way before our conversation.
Sure, sure. Yeah, you went in and changed it right now. It used to say CEO. I know it.
This was such an amazing conversation. But I like to take it back and just, what's your favorite childhood memory?
Ooh, well, I mean, not to be predictable, but I don't know if you understand how obsessed with airplanes I am. And any opportunity I could get to be in an airplane was really special. And it still is to this day. And my favorite memory would be my grandfather was a captain for US Airways, and he was a pilot his whole life. And when I decided I was probably like 15 or 16. I knew that this airplane thing was not going to fade anytime soon, and I knew I wanted to invest some time and attention and energy into understanding the world of aviation. What would it take to be able to actually fly these things by myself? And so I asked my grandfather, you know, any advice or where do I start or how does this work? And he invited me to stay with him for a week. And it was one of the first trips I did kind of alone. And I went and stayed at my grandfather's beautiful house up in way up in upstate New York, in Gilbertsville, New York. And every day we would drink some coffee and eat some breakfast, and he would take me over to the airport, and I would meet a bunch of other retired pilots. I would get to see their planes. I flew in a few different airplanes, I think three different airplanes with three different instructors that week, and I got the chance to really ask all the questions that had been burning in my mind and really start to see how airplanes work and how people, real people, can just learn to fly them and become someone able to fly airplanes. And that was a pivotal moment in my life, because it was some cool bonding time with my grandfather that I'm really glad I spoke up and asked for. And it definitely put me on the path of airplanes being not just a dream, but something I could make part of my life. And I'm so glad I did.
So my nephew wants to be a pilot. So one of these days I am going to schedule a call.
Yeah, absolutely.
And introduce you to him.
Sure.
He's 7, so I am trying. I do not know. It's okay if he changes his mind, but I'm just trying to show him that his dream is valid.
And absolutely.
When I get a chance and we're in the same town, I'm going to say, hey, Bobby, I have a guy here. He's 7, and he just wants to ask you questions about airplanes and pilots. And I want to see if he's going to ask questions or not.
Oh, man. I will talk to him for as long as he wants to talk about airplanes. I'd be happy to.
Oh, we now have our next date. Fun.
Yes. Perfect.
Bobby, I'd like to give you an opportunity to ask me a question.
Well, I wanted to ask you about flow state. We kind of covered that, but do you have any other thoughts of a time where you felt like you were in a moment that you were doing what you were born to do in that high skill, high challenge, in the zone?
Mm.
What was the last time you felt like that?
Have I ever felt like that? Good question. I don't think... Maybe I have. I'm trying to look back. So last year, I was part of a team that was mentoring underprivileged children. The company is called Seka Zambia, the organization instead. So how do they call them? The companies that are for business, but for impact as well. I've forgotten. But yes, so... No. There's this fancy word. It's not even a fancy word. It's not an organization. It's not a non-profit. And it's not just for profit. It's in between. What's that word?
I'm not sure.
Me too. So they get children from underprivileged places in Lusaka, where I am, and they take them to their studio and teach them Seka skills, because it's called Seka Zambia. So they have the mind, body, and soul program, and they brought me on the mind program, and I was part of the team designing a mentorship program to mentor them. I think in the beginning, I was so skeptical because I have never done sessions before. So I used to do that every weekend last year. I never stood in front of people to mentor them and have sessions and be asked questions. So at first, I was very insecure because I was doing that for the first time. I think 3 months into it, I got a hang of it. And that opened other doors of me hosting other people. So now I can go from being asked to speak in front of people. I can create the content and I can actually confidently speak in front of people. I think that's my flow state, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. Because to be able to communicate effectively and feel confident doing it is a great skill.
I still think I have a long way to go in public speaking. I want to take classes this year. But yeah, I think in that specific instant, it's the only thing I can remember. And something else happened when I was 18. I used to host sessions. I worked for an organization called Resource Development, and we would go in communities and talk about financial literacy. I think that process, for me, I think it's a process. I don't think flow state just happens at any given time, just suddenly. I think it's a process of you accumulating experience and expertise, and you reach a point where it comes easy to you. Correct me if I'm wrong. That's my
Well,
understanding.
I do think that's true. I think there are easier ways to get into flow state that might not be your business purpose or your calling. Like, for example, I play soccer twice a week, and I had a game on Monday. I scored 2 goals. Thanks for asking. But even casual soccer with friends, like that put me in flow state because I find it challenging. It's a mission to score the goal and prevent the other team from scoring. I'm fully focused on soccer. I'm not at all focused on my email or my life or my stress or my distractions. And, having played soccer since high school, I've developed some skill in it. Nothing crazy, but it's enough to put me in that flow state where I have the right level of challenge and skill and control and focus. Where coming out of a 1 hour soccer game on Monday, I felt great. I felt like I had reset. I felt like I had gotten a break from all of the stressful priorities that were competing for my attention because I tuned them all out for an hour. And that is the role of flow state too, just teaching your mind, giving your mind the benefit of real focus can equip you to be better focused on the productive stuff you have to do tomorrow.
When you put it that way, hiking. Hiking is never the same. But I think it does give me a flow state because there's no network, no one can reach you, and I go for like 4 hours, and maybe I'm with my friends or not. But yeah, I think hiking
That's
does that
perfect.
for me. It's challenging, but I can still easily do it because I've been doing it for so many years. Okay,
I
yeah.
love that. I love that. And I
Hiking,
think that's
hiking.
important to mention because ideally, flow state is your job and your whole day and your whole life. But that's a tall order and it's not realistic for most of us. But just to get that hike in or that soccer game gives your brain the opportunity to experience flow state, and that's going to benefit you in general. So it's not about playing soccer for work or hiking for your job. It's just getting into that mind space so that you're able to hyper focus on the stuff you need to, whether it's work or play or anything else.
Yeah, hiking. Yeah,
Hiking. I love it. I gotta go hiking
hiking.
more. It's too
You
cold for
should.
hiking right now, but I'm gonna go in when it gets a
Go in
little warmer.
summer.
Yes, I will.
It's
That's a good one. That's a
so
good one.
sad that we're coming to the end of the podcast. I hope you had fun.
I sure did, and I appreciate it. And I'd be happy to jump on to chat with you some more sometime or interrupt you
Yes.
about airplanes in the meantime.
I have technical questions I'll ask after this.
Okay.
So my last question is, what do you look forward to?
Oof, my mom has trained me well that you always have to have something to look forward to. You should always
Ooh.
know what's next that you're looking forward to. She also says you should also have a bottle of champagne in your fridge at all times, and I think that's very
I need to
true.
meet your mom. I need to meet your mom. She sounds like So she and I would vibe at a certain level.
Oh,
I always
absolutely.
like having a bottle of wine in my fridge.
So I guess I look forward to the small things. I'm looking forward to cooking dinner tonight. My wife just got back from a trip. I'm excited to spend some time with her this evening. I'm excited for my soccer game next Monday. I'm looking forward to the work. I like my work enough to look forward to that. I guess my next big thing is we're planning our honeymoon now in May and have some really exciting parts of that starting to take shape. And that's going to be really fun to get away and spend some time seeing the world. I'm very much looking forward to that.
I love that answer. Like, I haven't gotten it before. I'm looking forward to cooking. I always get the big stuff. I always get the big stuff. I'm looking forward to going to bed after this.
That's valid. And it's funny, this is a whole nother subject, so I'll try to be brief, but because our events team is about our mission is to make people happy. And because we follow Simon Sinek, start with why, we're very clear on our why. And we had a team meeting today. And the first thing we do every week when we start our production meeting is we go around and we say, what's bringing you happy? We call it, what's your happy this week? And so everyone did one. I said, I just got a pickleball paddle and I'm going to learn pickleball. And somebody said, I went to a cool show last week. And we've set the tone for the meeting by taking a moment to refocus on the happiness because that's our mission. And that's so important and so difficult because we have humans in general have a negativity bias where your mind will always tell you all the negative things you need to worry about. And so it takes a choice to say, I'm gonna focus on the happy stuff for a second. And that can really change your outlook on things. So yes, focus on the little positives too.
I love that. I really genuinely look forward to going to bed after 30 minutes
Good. Well, let's get you to
and
bed.
watching Netflix. Yeah, I am going to
Yes.
look for Taylor Swift's concert on
Yes.
Netflix and
Perfect.
sing her songs. This has been fun. I have learned so much. I have so many questions. I know I'm going to catch up with you. I am keeping you close, Bobby. Look at what you've
Perfect.
done to
Please do.
Thank you so much for the life of service you give. You are a relentless optimist, and I think we need more people like that. I think it's the first episode I've genuinely enjoyed recording
Wow, thank
today,
you.
this year actually. It's too soon, but I love it, and I loved having you here, and thank you so much for all you do.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been fun. I appreciate it.
Yes, and for everybody listening, it's been great. I hope you enjoy this. I hope you like the exercise Bobby and I did. Do it with a friend, do it alone, share it with a friend, and let us know what you think. Follow Bobby, follow Tosa Management, and bye for now.